You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. I'm Chris Manning. Joining me today, you heard him yesterday breaking on the George Hill rumors, is Mike Zavagano from FearTheSword.com. Mike, how are you?
Doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we are here to break down J.R. Smith and Jay Crowder seasons. We're going to spend a little bit of time on both, starting with J.R. Smith. But Mike, one question I did ask you yesterday on the pod is, if in a vacuum, the two names we've heard so far with the Cavs are DeAndre Jordan and George Hill, which one of those in a vacuum do you think would make more of a difference for this Cavs team?
In a vacuum, I think it's DeAndre Jordan. I think that the upgrade in rebounding and interior defense would be helpful to the Cavs. Looking at their roster and looking at the potential upgrades that they can make, you would like to believe that at least one of the Cavs' multitude of wings could kind of give you a decent percentage of the production that George Hill would bring, some combination of them. Whereas I don't think that any Cavs player actually has the skill set that DeAndre Jordan possesses, both in terms of his vertical spacing and just his individual defensive rebounding, which is excellent. The prowess that he showed protecting the rim, it's been down this year, but it's still significantly better than either Tristan Thompson or Kevin Love. So I think that in a vacuum, in terms of who is just probably a larger upgrade over what's currently being thrown out there, I would say that would be DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you look at what he would offer the Cavs, it is he would offer some protection for Kevin Love, assuming Kevin Love's not traded and need to protect Isaiah better. We talked about George Hill yesterday. People can go check out the first part of the Wednesday podcast to hear about George Hill. But I think it's someone that I think would help you in some ways. But I think DeAndre has the higher upside to do so. So Mike, we're gonna start with J.R. Smith. Not a good year for J.R. Smith. I'm going to run through his stats really quick. As of Tuesday, and when we're recording this, because we record ahead and lock on Cavs these days, he's playing in 44 games, 29.8 minutes a game. He's shooting 37.3% from the field. That actually up from last year when he was 34.6% for the year, shooting worse than he did last year from three, down to 34.2%, averaging 7.6 points per game, under a little over two assists, under one steal, and is just not quite the J.R. Smith I think that Cavs fans were used to during the title run. This is a guy whose PR is for the second year row now below 10 for the first time in his career. He's never had a PR that's been slow. It is 7.5 right now. It is 8.1 last year, and if you look at the difference from last year, this year you would have thought, even though he's a year older, maybe that not being hurt, the contract situation, and the what was going on with his daughter last year seemed to weigh on him quite a bit. That is not really the case this year. Are you surprised, Mike, first off, that J.R. Smith has been this bad so far this year?
Yeah, I'm definitely surprised. Obviously last year, as you say, he was going through a lot of stuff both on and off the floor. Thought that that would kind of be a quote unquote lost year for him, only playing 41 games. And then, he would be able to kind of bounce back this year. I kind of expected him to, show something this year that demonstrated that last year was kind of just, a difficult year for him, but he was ready to kind of, get back into it this year and really make an impact. And really on both ends, you just aren't seeing much from him this year at all.
I think the most concerning thing for me is I know his three-point shooting has been bad, and his overall offense has been kind of hit or miss. He has some games where he starts off and he does some creating and he hits a three, and I'm like, oh, maybe Jerry's going to have it this game, then he tails off. I think the most concerning thing for me with him has been his defense. He's never been a lockdown defender, but he's been a really good-ish defender since he's come to the Cavs. I think that's a pretty fair assessment of him, and he's not, again, not locking down guys necessarily, but he's been able to hang, and he's looked, in my mind, kind of lost this year. And maybe that's fueled by his shooting. Maybe there is some balance to him there where he needs to do the offensive stuff well too, but kind of buying on the defensive end. And the Cavs as a team are atrocious defensively, so he's not, you know, the reason this team is has like the worst defense amongst real NBA teams, because I don't count the Kings, but you're looking at someone who I think has just become a sort of liability on that end. And I think, I don't know 100% if that is worse than the three-point shooting tailing off, but I think it's at the very least the same exact, it's equally as bad, as that he's not helping them really space the floor.
Yeah, I mean, there are kind of two subsets to the J.R. Smith defensive problems. The first would just be pure on-ball defense. He just doesn't look like he's as laterally quick as he used to be. He doesn't look like he can hang with a lot of the best players on the perimeter. You'll even see him get beat by some significantly lesser players. That is certainly concerning. He's kind of the guy that the Cavs are putting out there at the point of attack. So, you know, before you even think about, oh, you know, well, Kevin Love's playing center, you know, this isn't working because Kevin Love's playing center or whatever. I mean, the Cavs have a 118 defensive rating with J.R. Smith on the floor, Kevin Love off the floor in 600 possessions. So, you know, the Cavs defense is 7 points per 100 possessions worse with J.R. Smith on the floor. And part of it is that second aspect, which is really his off the ball. I guess attentiveness is probably the best word. It seems as if he's just not all there all the time. He's not crisp with his rotations. The scheme that the Cavs run really does call upon guys to make rotations, make them early, and make them correct. And, you know, when you have a guy like J.R. Smith who's breaking down, it's really going to collapse your entire defense. And so I think that when you combine those two things, you know, both kind of his inattentiveness and then also just, you know, the loss of kind of his lateral quickness and his ability to guard at the point of attack, you really do see the makings of a guy who's been probably one of the worst perimeter defenders, you know, who's actually relied upon in the NBA this year.
I think it's what you point out about him looking a little shop-worn is maybe going to end up being true in some way, because this is a guy who's been in the league since high school. He's also played in 3 straight finals, and you know, he's not carrying the same load LeBron is, but that takes a weight on you no matter who you are. We've heard guys that played in the Heat and played on the Spurs talk about how much of a physical toll that takes on you. And right now he is, I think you're right, kind of a disaster. And looking at some of these lineups, right now, the worst lineup he's involved in is the Cavs' new starting lineup. That is J.R. Smith, Isaiah Thomas, Kevin Love, LeBron James, Jay Crowder. That starting lineup we've seen since Isaiah came back. So, and per 100 possessions, that is a negative it's 21.2 points worse per 100 possessions. That's how much is being unscored. That is a lot of buckets they're just giving up. And he's not blaming us for that. But then you look at him playing with Wade, Love, Crowder, James. It's minus 20.3 points per 100 possessions. And if you look at some of his two-man, you know, his two-man combinations, right now his best one is him and Kyle Korver, but his worst, him and Derrick Rose, is a negative 16.9, something we thought might make sense. Him and LeBron is a negative this year, negative 3.6. And, you know, we're not to the point where we can evaluate him and Isaiah yet, really, in that regard, but he's been a negative in a lot of his lineups, and some of the ones that, you know, have worked, it's you know, him and Love, you know, is a negative. Him and LeBron are a negative, and that's tied to him being with the starters. And I think it's a problem that he's playing this bad, because there's not, like, an obvious fix. That's kind of the question about JR that I don't know how to answer, is what do you do with him? I think Kyle Korver's been maybe the third, fourth best Cav this year, somewhere in there behind LeBron and Kevin Love. Certainly one of the most consistent, although he's not quite been as impactful of late. But I don't know if starting him makes sense with Isaiah as your starting point guard. And I don't know what you do with JR other than just you have to kind of hope he gets better, or you try to deal him, which we know from some reporting that the Cavs have openly kind of tried to do.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, on the other side of the ball, it's not going well either. You know, he's played 101 minutes alongside Isaiah, Kevin Love, and LeBron. In those minutes, he has a 31 true shooting percentage. That whose average is 55% for people who aren't aware of that. And so obviously that's awful. He's shooting 26.5% from three in January. but also his attempts are down. He was at 4.6 attempts per game in December, 6 attempts a game in November. He's down to 3.8 attempts per game in January. He's not alone in the fact that he's currently struggling to shoot the ball. You can basically lump every single Cavalier into that category. But he's one of the guys that you're supposed to be relying on here to space the floor for that starting group. And, they're certainly creating open looks for him. It's not like his shot profile is really changing. He's still getting open, wide open looks. And, you see him against Oklahoma City, and he hits the side of the backboard on his first shot. And so those are things that are probably even more concerning for me. The defense is obviously probably a bigger problem, but just in terms of, like, if he's not going to give you anything on defense and then he's also going to shoot the ball this poorly, it's just really hard to justify continuing to play him at the minutes load that he is, really regardless of who you're replacing him with, because that's just such a negative player on both ends.
So how would you approach the Jarrett Smith problem? If you're Ty Lue, what do you do with Jarrett Smith right now?
I mean, I personally think that it's probably pretty difficult for Ty Lue to do anything in this flux period. As we talked about earlier, George Hill might be the guy who's coming in, but you'd expect that the Cavs are acquiring someone. I would assume that person is going to be the impetus for lineup changes, most likely sending J.R. Smith to the bench. So, I mean, if you're Ty Lue, I think you're in a difficult position because you probably don't want to make any changes that you're just going to have to change again. So I assume that you just kind of ride it out with JR, wait for whatever trade to happen, and then you probably send him to the bench from there. I don't foresee the Cavs coming out of the All-Star break with J.R. Smith as their starting two guard. So
it's worth noting, too, that JR wasn't happy when they tried to send him to the bench to start the year. He was someone that I think was maybe more publicly than others, upset that Dwayne Wade came in, and I think that is worth noting, is how would he handle something like that. You do have to get him to buy in. I have a hard time believing that they are going to trade him. His contract's not terrible, but in a league where there's not a lot of cap space, and he does have guaranteed money for next season, I have a hard time seeing most teams kind of willing to take on that money. So I kind of expect JR to be around and to have the Cavs try to get something out of him. And maybe they move on from him this summer. Maybe that's ends up being the move with him, but I think you're kind of right. I think he probably goes to the bench, but how he handles that to me is going to be really interesting. And I do really think that the Cavs need him. I think they need him to at least be a little bit better. I don't know if it's reasonable to expect him to get back to where he was the year they won the title, but I think they need him to not be as bad as he's been since he came back last year and played 41 games last season.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I mean, if you're going to be playing him any load of minutes, even if it's not the current starter's minutes, 30 minutes a game, if you're going to knock that down to maybe 20 minutes a game or something, and then you kind of just hope that, maybe those 10 fewer minutes per game are going to keep him fresher and maybe he'll find something. Maybe he won't, but on the defensive end, at least, maybe a lesser load and playing against less top-end talent guys in bench units might kind of help him regain a little bit on that end. But it doesn't seem as if, through 44, 45 games here, he's going to find something if you're just going to keep running him out there over and over again. So there have been some blips in his shooting this year. He's been okay for small stretches. He was solid in December, but overall, he really isn't shooting at the same consistent rate, especially above the break this year that he was even last year. So, when he's not giving you that shooting ability that's really, stretching the floor for those starting guys, and it's hard to, even play him with the starting lineup. I mean, you even look at a guy like Amon Shumpert. Amon Shumpert can shoot 34% from three, I would think, and he's probably a better option at this point for the defensive end. I mean, I'm not saying that Amon Shumpert should suddenly start games for this team, but, you just have to think that JR is kind of in that vein of guy with the way that he's playing now, that he's definitely more easily replaceable in the starting lineup because there are so many other guys who could just give you 34% from three in bad defense.
I think it's a good point there, and I think, too, with JR, you're looking at someone that I think could really benefit from being on bench units, and I think that his issues are magnified, I kind of think, kind of by the fact that the Cavs don't quite have as much juice from three this season, and I think that's part of it. Before we continue here, in a Jay Crowder reminder that you can find Locked On Cavaliers on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. I use Overwatch or Overcast, excuse me. You can get it there, and you can also now get it on Spotify. So you can click Spotify in the show notes below, and you can start listening to Locked On Cavs as well as the entire Locked On network on Spotify, which is, in my opinion, because I use it and I'd like them to pay it for sponsorship, clearly the best streaming service. Mike, Jay Crowder is the other one, and I think he, of the two, is the most important guy for this Cavs team in terms of if I could pick one Cavs role player to turn it around, I think it would be him. And running through his stats, he's played 45 games, started 42, averaging 8.6 points, shooting 41% from the field, down from 46% a year ago, which is his best season, shooting 31.3% from three, down from 39.8% last season, is rebounding 2.5 less rebounds per game. I don't think he's had quite the defensive impact you would hope him for, and if you look at some of his advanced numbers, he's got a PR of 10.3. That would be his lowest since he was a 22-year-old in Dallas. And for me, the one that really stands out to me, if you look at his rebounding numbers. Right now, he's got a true total rebounding percentage per Basketball Reference of 7.3%, so he's grabbing 7.3% of possible rebounds. He's never been a great rebounder overall, but his best was last year at 9.9. If you look at his defensive rebounding numbers, it's the same thing. This year, 10.6 defensive rebounding percentage. Last year was a career best 17.3, and as a small ball four, with LeBron not crashing a lot, that really matters, and I think that, to me, I think the three-point shooting is an issue, but I almost think the rebounding is a bigger deal when he's been playing the four.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who the defensive metrics are certainly not painting in the most favorable light right now. He rates 87th out of 96 power forwards in defensive RPM, which certainly is not the guy that you thought you were getting. You know, as you were saying, the rebounding, he's down to 9.8% of available defensive rebounds, excluding free throws. Last year, he was at 14% there. You would think that, you know, that would get bumped down with the presence of LeBron James and maybe even the improvement in rebounding from Al Horford to Kevin Love. But you would certainly not believe that it would be that low. He definitely isn't really making an impact on the glass. He's guarding fours for the most part. Sometimes threes, kind of depends on who LeBron feels like guarding almost, it seems. And, you know, you can make an argument for sure that that's not great for Jay Crowder. That he's listed at 6'6". I don't think that he's actually 6'6". You'd like to, you know, even Shane Battier, when he was kind of playing that role next to LeBron, he's both a bigger and kind of a thicker guy than Crowder. Crowder probably playing out of position. It might make him uncomfortable, but it just seems truly that he's never really found that comfort in this Cavs system, both offensively and defensively. It just seems like he's kind of miscast everywhere, and he's probably – there are probably better ways to utilize him. It would probably take buy-in from guys that you're probably not going to get buy-in from. And so that's kind of a difficult conversation to have. He's definitely struggling defensively, definitely struggling to help on the glass. And like you said, I mean, you know, when he's going to be the guy relied upon to guard, you know, the Kevin Durants of the world, the Kawhi Leonards of the world, when Kawhi Leonard is healthy, he's a guy that's extremely important, and when he's not really playing well, it definitely shows in the Cavs defense, just like it shows for J.R. Smith.
What do you attribute him not ever really getting in that flow that you would kind of need him to get into? What do you attribute him not being able to find that? Is that a Lou thing? Is that the Cavs everything? Is it a combination of a lot of things? What do you think it is?
I mean, I do think that he's playing out of position on defense, and I think that that is kind of, in my mind, would be at least the impetus for all of it. He's probably guarding bigger and stronger guys than he has in the past. So, he, you know, coming into the year, obviously we know that he wasn't in the greatest of shape. And, you know, he may just be worn down a little bit, too, by just that constant grind that might be a little bit more than the grinds that he's faced in previous years. So I think that was probably kind of the beginning of it. And then just on the offensive end, I mean, you go from the Cavs system is very different than the Celtics system, not to say that one is better than the other, but they're certainly different in the way that, you know, Crowder is kind of having to spot up a little bit more this year than he probably has in the past. He does continue to cut, but maybe not as much because now the Cavs do have a lot of cutters. You know, when he's out there next to Dwayne Wade, next to Jeff Green, you know, those are guys that aren't providing spacing, and so they're also trying to cut, and so you might be cutting into lanes. And then we've seen a lot of teams use their centers to guard Jay Crowder, and I'm sure that, you know, that just kind of, it's not something that he's probably never seen before in his entire life, and so he's probably thinking like, oh, you know, they're disrespecting me, they're guarding me with their center, I got to knock down these shots, or I got to beat them off the dribble, or I got to do this and this and this. And, you know, it just probably, there's a lot to process with that, you know, seeing a different look, and you probably feel disrespected, and you probably feel like you should be able to knock down those shots or beat those guys off the dribble. And, you know, you're in a new situation, you're trying to help a team, and you might just be doing, you know, seven things instead of two. So I would think that that's probably part of it as well.
The centers guarding him thing is one of the, I think, the probably the most problematic thing with him in offense, because you don't want him to be someone that's creating off the dribble. That's not his game. I think if you're looking at the ideal role for him, it is a little bit of cutting. It's a little crashing and being kind of the safety valve for certain situations. And I think you're also looking at a guy who like maybe his 3-point shooting last year was a glitch in the system. I think that certainly seems to be the case. Like there's just no reason to think necessarily that this is a guy that it can do that. And if you're looking at his catch and shoot numbers, you know, so he, overall, this is a guy who's shooting 3.7 attempts from three a game, right? So, and that's per NBA stats. This year, 3.2 of his attempts are from three, are catch and shoot. So like the vast, vast majority of his catch and shoot attempts are from 3-point. If you go back to last year, there's a little bit, he was shooting more threes, but he was taking the 4.4% or 4.4 catch and shoot attempts per game, was shooting 40% on those. So he was something with what the Cavs are doing doesn't suit him. And I wonder if it's something similar to Korver, and he's not nearly as good of a shooter as Korver, but we saw Korver adjust when he came to Cleveland, where he wasn't used to just standing there and shooting. Maybe there's something to that with Crowder too, that he played well in that Boston system because it kept him moving and it kept him engaged in a way that watching LeBron and Kevin Love work sometimes isn't necessarily going to be that. And maybe, I don't know if that's the case, but that's kind of one of the things to me that makes sense in that regard. Or otherwise, he just, like last year was his peak, and that's totally possible as well, even though this is a pretty significant drop-off for him.
Yeah, I tend to side with the second thing that you said. I mean, if you look at his shooting numbers throughout his career, rookie year, 33%. Year after that, 33%. You know, he splits time between Boston and Dallas in the next year, but, you know, he's 29% after getting traded to Boston on 163 attempts. Then next year in Boston, he's 34%. And then this year, he's 32%. So outside of one outlier year, you know, 40%, he basically is like a 33% shooter. And I feel like if you just, like, looked at him shoot, you know, if we were just people who had never heard of Jay Crowder before, knew nothing about him, and, you know, we walked into a game and we saw him take five threes in a game, you would probably think, okay, this guy's probably a 33% shooter. There's nothing about his form that makes you think that he has, you know, an extremely pure shot. He lands differently, you know, based on how covered he is, what situation, I'm not entirely sure, but, you know, sometimes he's landing compact, sometimes he's landing with his front leg way out in front. And so, you know, if you told me he's a 33% three-point shooter, I'd probably say that makes a lot of sense. So I just don't really think that there's anything underlying the 33% that he's shooting or 32% that he's shooting from three that is going to tell me that he should be shooting much better. You know, maybe he could alter his attempt rate a little bit, and shoot more corner threes and fewer above the break threes, but he's basically right in line with his career averages. He's taken 13% of his shots from corner three last year, 12, the year before 10. And so, you know, he's been a better corner three-point shooter throughout his career. That's not, you know, something that's unique to him. But I just think that he kind of is a 33% three-point shooter, and I just think that if you, you know, think otherwise, you just might need to adjust your expectations.
I agree with you, too, about the defensive role. And I think, like, they're kind of having him do what they, I think, in a dream world would have, like, Paul George or Jimmy Butler doing. And he's just not that type of defender. He's a good defender. He's a solid defender, but he's not quite, when he's at his best, at least, he's a good defender, but he's not quite that guy. So looking at him, what do you do to get Jay Crowder going? What are some things the Cavs can try to do schematically, lineup-wise, to try to get Crowder looking more comfortable? Because I do think he's – I don't know if you agree with that assessment I had at the top, that he's the role player I'd kind of want to click a fire with the Cavs, but I really do think he's out of their struggling role guys, he's the guy to me that stands out the most as someone they really need to turn it up to another gear.
Yeah, I might side with – I might pick Tristan Thompson, but I think that
the Twitter mentions are going to be like, Mike, I don't believe you. That's what they're going to come for you for that one.
I my opinions on him are well known, but if he was actually like playing well, like if he was actually like, you know, demonstrating that he could, you know, catch the ball in the short roll and make a pass to the corner or, you know, make a dribble or actually switch onto guys on the perimeter and defend the rim. Like the idealized version of Tristan Thompson would probably help this team more than anybody. I just don't think that it's possible for him to get there anymore. But aside from that, I do think that in theory, if you were running this team in an egoless world, you would tell LeBron James that he's going to guard the best player on the opposing team. You're going to tell Jay Crowder that he's going to guard the second best guy. Obviously, that's never going to happen in the regular season. And whether it happens in the playoffs is kind of an unknown to me. I just think that LeBron in the free safety role doesn't work. I think that LeBron thinks that it works, but it ends up just with him gambling a lot, getting lazy a lot, switching a lot when he doesn't need to. You've seen his effort really wane in recent games, especially the Oklahoma City game. There were some, you know, mind-boggling plays where he just kind of didn't move at all on defense. And I think that this is because he's in this like free safety mindset. So I think that it would honestly help Jay Crowder and LeBron both if LeBron would just guard the guys that, you know, are the best wing player on the opposing team, like he probably should be. And that would be an adjustment that I would make in the playoffs. And I don't know, you know, if that's something that LeBron wants to do at this point. I don't think it's something that he will do in the regular season, but I really do think that it would help Jay Crowder to ease some burden on him on defense and just kind of simplify things from him. And then just, you know, kind of hoping that the offense will kind of come as the defense, you know, isn't such a hotspot pressure issue.
LeBron's free safety would work if they had better of all team defenders. If Jay Crowder was just one of four other good defenders, it would work
better. I think that LeBron at free safety works in the playoffs because LeBron is more locked in.
But it's
in
also
the regular season, LeBron at free safety, he just kind of doesn't do anything.
Well, and I think there's a cap on it too. When you're a guy who's the most physically imposing guy in your team, like is doing that, I think there's just a limit on what it actually provides. Like I think it's just like when you don't have ball hawks and stuff around him and guys that can actually defend the best players in the world on the perimeter and lock down point guards, it's different. Like LeBron and free safety having to clean up messes, you know, like I have some people that have talked about like him not becoming a rim protector when KD and Giannis have become rim protectors to some degree. And to like Durant's like one of the league leaders in blocks. I think like that could be a thing if the Cavs had better defenders. Like if Isaiah Thomas wasn't your defensive point guard, you know, if you had someone better, or if you had like Kevin Love was like not, if Kevin Love could like defend the rim, like it would be easier for LeBron to do some of that. And it doesn't in the regular season. You're right though, because he does roam and he gets lazy and his positioning's really bad.
Yeah, I would also argue that it's another Cavs strategy that was born out of a desire to beat the Warriors in the finals. You know, which is put LeBron on Draymond Green and have him in this free safety role. And it worked, you know, to a degree pretty well in the finals because, you know, LeBron is engaged, locked in. That has carried over to the regular season with, a lack of success. I think you see the same thing with the Kevin Love high hedge blitzing of pick and rolls. It was devised to specifically stop Steph Curry in the finals, and it worked when it was instituted and the Cavs won the championship, and then they carried it over to the regular season, and it just doesn't work as well in the regular season because you're facing different teams and your personnel is engaged to a different degree. And so I think that both of those schematic things are things that were born out of a Warriors-specific, final-specific mentality, and that they're just not things that other teams are doing in the regular season, and I think that there's a reason for that.
100% agree. Jay Crowder is going to be very interesting to go forward. I don't know, you know, what you could alter the lineup. I've some people have talked about, would you start Tristan again to have him play the two? Possibly, do you have him come off the bench? I don't know what the right move is, but I don't think you're going to see the starting lineup. I think it wouldn't shock me if after the All-Star break, if in some capacity, at least one of JR and Jay Crowder are no longer starting, and it, maybe both of them are coming off the bench at that point. Who really knows at this point?
Right. No, I definitely agree with that. I think that either one or both of them will be coming off the bench when we come back. I think it's February 22nd from the All-Star break.
And how that impacts Wade and Jeff Green and all these other guys that have had better seasons is going to get really complicated. And this Cavs team is never boring because they're just always full of drama. But Mike Zevgano is the guest. You can find him on Twitter at mzevgano11. He'll surely be back on the pod soon to talk about something crazy the Cavs have done. And they're probably, before you hear this podcast, something crazy will happen. And hopefully it makes it out. But Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me as always, and go Cavs.
Yeah, go enjoy Friday's game against the Pacers. Everyone, we'll have a show pregame, but just in case you don't listen to that pod, enjoy, and we'll see how the Cavs do against another solid team.